You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 318.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. We have a return guest today, and we're mostly going to be talking about his new startup, Fused.io, and geospatial data. I, for one, have always been interested in maps and location and visualizing the world. And at Fused, you can see some stunning visualizations that they've produced using their bleeding edge tools. So I'm really interested in it. Today's guest has had an exceptional career. I'd like to mention first as an engineer at Uber, where he led the H3 project to specify a hexagonal grid to map the world for Uber. Co-founder at Unfolded.ai, another geospatial startup acquired by Foursquare, and finally, co-founder of Fused.io. Isaac Brodsky, you've reached another Local Maximum. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me.
Let's start with your new company called Fused. Tell me the story. You know, why a new startup? What's the difference between Fused and Unfolded? Or maybe I wrote here, what's the difference? But also, like, I'm sure there's a difference in product, but also there's a difference in terms of the work involved in getting them set up and where you're kind of going with it. So tell me about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Unfolded was my previous startup, and you're absolutely right that kind of every time you do a startup, it's a unique experience. It's a new experience. I would tell people before that, you know, one of the reasons I was doing a startup is because you learn a tremendous amount being involved with a startup or doing a startup. And the thing that I've learned for the second time is that you learn a tremendous amount of new stuff doing it a second time. Let me back up to give a little bit more perspective on where I'm coming from and what my history is for anybody who's didn't hear the last episode I was on. So my professional history goes back to, I think it's almost 8 or 9 years ago when I joined Uber on their marketplace data team. And I was an engineer there working on these big data systems. We were aggregating supply and demand data for the Uber markets. And then this would feed into systems that do dynamic pricing, which is the so-called surge pricing, or dynamic promotion, or things like this that want to optimize the market on a minute-by-minute basis. And around the time that I was joining Uber, Uber was going from doing this dynamic pricing on a very coarse level to doing it on a much more fine-grained level, which was going to this hexagonal grid system called H3. And I started working on that project, and that was one of the big things I worked on there, and I eventually got that open sourced. And a few years after that, and this was in 2019, myself and a few of my colleagues decided to jump out of Uber and start this company, Unfolded. We started this company that was essentially using some of these open source technologies that Uber had gotten out into the world. Some of them had been donated to foundations, and building kind of a managed service around that. So this was a product we called Unfolded Studio. And this was doing visualization, filtering, exploration, some analysis, and publishing of data, and especially geospatial data. So data with some kind of space component, some kind of location component. So like a car driving around a city has a spatial component, has a trail. So I was working on that in kind of a technical role, as well as doing a lot of different kind of operational things for that startup. That startup joined or was acquired by Foursquare in 2021. And I was there for another year and a half until about the beginning of last year, when I decided, okay, I've still some more ideas that I want to try building out. And that's when myself and co-founder jumped out of Foursquare and started this new company, Fused. And we started working on that.
So Yeah, new things you want to try out. This is the lead that's buried. Like, what was so exciting that you had to do this?
Absolutely. So we had, I think, built up a really good tool as part of Unfold and as part of Foursquare, but we still saw different aspects that people were struggling with in the data domain and geospatial data particularly. And we wanted to try some different approaches to this. And this is kind of what led to what we've now released as the Fused product, the Fused Workbench and API and this UDF ecosystem, this user-defined function ecosystem. And this was, I think, came from the pain point of processing this kind of data is really difficult. Every time that I would need to do this in the last several jobs that I've had, I wound up getting really frustrated of, okay, I have to write this like really complicated data processing job. I need to work with a system like Spark, which is, I will say, very powerful, but also very difficult to debug. And if you've ever had to either configure Spark or you've had to figure out how do you get a Spark job into a state where it runs, some people are very good at this. Some people are very happy doing this. I'm not one of them myself, though. And so I found that I was getting very frustrated with it. And
I'm biting my lip, and I have for the last, because it's so true what you're saying. I just have to say that. Sorry. Go ahead.
So that's how I know that you've really worked with Spark before. And there's not really that many better tools out there. There's starting to be more tools now that are replacing different parts of Spark. But for a lot of users, they need something which is able to process this kind of data, is able to process it at scale, is able to help them integrate those results into other parts of their systems. And I think Spark isn't really it right now, and notebooks aren't really it right now. And that's the key idea, I think, behind Fused.
So let's talk about these UDFs for the listeners. Those are user-defined functions. I kind of assume you're talking about some kind of transformation on the data that people often want to do. Can you give an example of what the common use cases are and sort of the ones that you've solved in a way that you're happy with?
Yeah. So for anybody who wants to see kind of more of the technical side of this, also we have an open source GitHub repo where we have a lot of these UDFs written in kind of the Fused way. And so if you want to find that on GitHub, it's fused.io/UDFs. I'll start with kind of the very basic explanation, which is that it's a Python function which takes some parameters, which might be like part of the world that you want to process, or a number, or whatever parameter you want to define for it. It maybe loads some data for you. It maybe does some transformation for you. It returns some data from that function. And when you think about it that way, if it's just a Python function, they're very powerful, right? Because you can pack a lot of complexity into a function. You can pack a lot of logic into a function. But they're also very composable and reusable, because if somebody gives you a function and says, here's the three parameters that you can change. You can change, you know, some threshold for what sites to look at. You can change some travel time. You can change which state you're looking at. Then as a user of that, you're able to take that and make use of it. You're able to take that and actually put it into your own work, or to see different parts of the data that might be difficult to see if you were trying to do this in kind of a more freeform way. So it's essentially building a little bit of structure for somebody to put how they're loading their data or transforming their data into.
Can you give me like a more concrete example of a client you've worked with, if you can, like that, you know, has been helped by this or has used this?
Absolutely. So going more from the into the concrete, a few examples of this. One is a process called zonal stats. So this is where you have, let's say, a satellite image or aerial image of some area. And let's say you have like a satellite image of like some forest or some land that's being used for agriculture. And these satellite imagery, they're multispectral. They have a lot of different sensors in them. And you're able to use those sensors to do things like estimate how much vegetation there is in this area, or how much carbon or different types of vegetation or like human development, a lot of different parameters. And so there are users that are interested in looking at this and saying, for this plot of land, you know, if you're in agriculture or in environmental monitoring or disaster monitoring, disaster response, you want to be able to look at that part of the land and see how is this changing over time. And this maps, I think, very well into this UDF concept, because one, you might have different sources for this, you might have different timestamps for it, so you have to have this ability to rerun this same code multiple times and get different results out of it. And it's also still complicated enough that you want to be able to control exactly how the process works. And I found this as a common point for a lot of different customer use cases, client use cases, where they have specific requirements and they have reasons to have those specific requirements. And so we needed to give them a way that they can express that. So for zonal stats, an example of this might be that you need to include or exclude certain areas. You want to include, you want to do your aggregation in a different way. You want to, you know, however it is you want to do it, however it is you want to group the results, you're able to express that in the way that's right for you. And the end result of this is that, you know, let's say you're interested in how is that forest changing over time, you're able to get that result and continue getting that result. And you can monitor it over time. You can see on a maybe week-to-week or month-to-month basis or year-to-year, how is this piece of land changing? And you're able to then tell your own end user what is going on in the world.
So when you talk to people who are working on geospatial projects, you know, whether it's the project where you're tracking the change in vegetation or something else, and I'd be kind of interested to know what sort of companies are out there with these problems. It seems like almost everybody. But what types of problems or roadblocks are they running into? You know, I assume many of them kind of solve problems on their own. They use database. They use, you know, whatever. What are the most common issues that they're currently having, do you think?
I think a few that I'm seeing really commonly. One is the access to the data. So I think you put it really well, that they have some kind of database of this. They might have data that's coming in from different sources. So a good example of this is if they try to put their satellite imagery into that same database that they have all their parcel data in, or they have all their, you know, land plot data in, that's not necessarily going to work out so well. There's technical reasons why these things are not very efficient in that way. For geospatial data sets in general, they tend to be very, very large. And so the access to the data, getting the right part of the data set, getting that part of the data set very efficiently, I think tends to be a big challenge. On our website, we have this animation when you just open up fuse.io, which is showing this cloud cover moving across the Pacific Ocean and the United States. And I think that the main challenge with that, and there's all sorts of technical challenges in terms of how do you project the data correctly, how do you visualize the data, and so on. But one of the main challenges to that is how do you access the data in an efficient way? And this UDF approach that we have, I think, helps to alleviate this, because you can package up that part of the problem and you can reuse it. You don't have to like put it in some function in a notebook that then gets copy pasted somewhere else and somebody modifies and becomes kind of a mess. Because it's I have to sell my solution a little bit. Because it's running in a fused API, it's something where you can send out a bunch of calls at once, and we're able to process several different frames of that, you know, multiple frames at the same time in order to do this efficiently. And I think this is also an area where we're seeing a lot of development in the open source world with cloud native geospatial formats. And more so than the efficiency gains or kind of the correctness gains with working with formats like that, I think one of the big promises that's being made there is that that's going to help make your data more efficient to access. And that's not something which is necessarily a given if you go run out and use cloud native data formats, but it's something with that that enables. And I think the other roadblock that that we're trying to address, coming back to that that comment I had on notebooks a second ago, is how do these functions get written and then reused in production? And the usual process that I've seen happening in throughout industry is somebody writes a notebook. The notebook implements some algorithm and implements some analytic, and then you have to hand that off to somebody else to figure out how do I run this notebook repeatedly in like a pipelining system or a job system. And usually this is a tremendous source of friction. I have an example myself where I was trying to take some open source scientific process that I found on GitHub, and I wanted to run it myself. I wanted to try it. And most of it is some Python script that I can run. That's great. But in order to run that, I have to run this notebook. And I open up the notebook, and I see that it was saved with the cells run out of order. You know, the little numbering on the side shows that they were not run in that order. And I just said to myself, oh, no, I give this like 50% chance that this notebook actually runs. You know, that's a sinking feeling you don't want to have.
As a kind of software engineer, I never gained a love and appreciation for notebooks that many data people have. But that's just an aside. I do want to get into the cloud visualization on your front page in a minute. Well, why don't we get into it now, actually? That's more interesting, because that visualization on the front page is just stunning, as many of the visualizations on your site. And I noticed, you know, when we were doing Unfolded, there were a lot of really awesome visualizations too, but they were often like, you know, you could see the cells, you could see the hexagons and how they change over time. This mm-hmm. cloud visualization is just, it just looks like swirling clouds. And I know this is not a technical question, but maybe it is a technical question. How do you get it to look so naturalistic and not so, why does it look naturalistic and not pixelated?
I'm glad it's making a great impression, and it is something that we're regularly updating. So if you look in the corner of that on fuse.io, the bottom left, it'll show what you're looking at, and that's something that we're regularly refreshing with the actual data.
Oh wow, okay. So I see on the bottom left, I can see this is cloud data from April 15th, April 16th, April 17th. So this is like not something that you just rendered for a few weeks one time and keep on your front page. This is real-time data.
Yeah, this is something that we're regularly re-rendering. We're using the Fuse platform to do this. We put this together and we said, well, okay, we have it together. We can just rerun it. We can, you know, I think it's a lot more interesting to see the clouds that are happening, you know, the last couple of days than, you know, some random time that we came up with in the past. You're right. So this is a little bit different approach because this isn't a gridded approach. This is not a hexagon based approach. This is essentially at the the native resolution that the satellite is imaging the Earth, but it's probably closer to that. And that is a bit of a difference with what Fused is doing. I think Fused, we're trying to meet the data and the user where they are. We're providing some structure for that. We're providing some guidance. We're providing some suggestions for kind of good ways to use this data. But we're saying if you have data which is in this kind of raster format in this case, or is in a vector format, you can use that how you want. And if that looks like gridding it, if that looks like keeping it in that raster format, if that looks like rendering it as an animation, we want to empower you to do that. So in this example, the one that's at the top of that page, we're not using a grid system in order to render that. We're not re-aggregating the data or gridding it into these artificial cells after the image has been taken by the satellite.
So what is happening then? Is it in a different format? Is it rendered somehow that it could be continuous, or is it just so, or the data points just so dense that you can't see the discreteness of it?
Yeah, I think the real answer is that the data is dense enough that for the most part you can't. There's been a tremendous advancements in terms of Earth observation, I would say, in the last few years, and what we're able to do now with open data, and also on the proprietary side of things. So this is, this is data where the spatial resolution, how finally we can see what's going on with the clouds in each time that the image is being captured, is pretty high, and so you're not going to be seeing any loss of information from that side of the image. And also the temporal resolution is high enough that it's going to appear pretty fluid. It's not going to be stutter stepping between the clouds in one place and another. That density of information is really what the key is.
Yeah. So, but that also means that you're processing an enormous amount of data to get this to work.
Exactly. That's something that we had to build out. So we had to build out the capacity to process that. We had to build out the ability to do that that kind of fan out that I described, where we're processing multiple frames or different areas at the same time. And we also had to build out a lot of capacity in terms of how do we cache results and how do we not recompute things over and over again in order to make sure that this all is both runs fast enough that we're not going to be just sitting around waiting for this to render, and also that it's going to be cost effective, and we're not going to we're going to be able to render that with a reasonable cost.
Very, very cool. Okay, this is just came to my mind. This is more of a question to help me, but I actually think it's I think it's a relevant question to help people who may be less technical. I teach a data structures section at NYU this semester, and it's really interesting going back to undergrad data structures and trying to figure out, not just, teach them the data structures, but that they need to know for the class, but also to motivate, why are we studying data structures? Why is this interesting? Why is this something, at the core of what makes things possible in software? And so do you think there are any examples of data structures from a geospatial perspective that I could mention in the class to just just for fun, but also to sort of just motivate the learning of computer science.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great question, also because it's taking me back to my own undergraduate data structures course, which was a course I tremendously enjoyed, and I had a great professor who was a great inspiration, and did change some things about how my career progressed.
So would you mind saying who that was, where that was?
So I went to undergraduate at a school in St. Louis called Webster University, And the reason that I say that that she had a the professor was Professor Boyce was because I was not originally declared as a computer science major when I went into the school, and so I was actually in the business major, and I eventually wound up in the data structures course anyways, just because I enjoyed the computer science stuff. I'd always enjoyed the computer science stuff. And when I was in that course, that was one of the things that kind of made me realize, okay, you know what, I'm not going to pursue these other courses that I'm not enjoying and stuff like that. And I just decided, okay, I'll just switch major. I'll, you know, have her as my advisor. And, you know, she can kind of help me find, like, what are the courses that I would find the most interesting, the most engaging, and that was the result of it.
Wow, wow. So yeah, so that means that's even more motivation for data structures professors and instructors like me to find good examples, because there are a lot of business and majors are in that course, especially at NYU.
Yeah. So let me see a few. I think that I could. Mention that might have a good relation to spatial data, to temporal data. I think one of the main ones I would say is tree structures. I feel like we use that quite a bit in terms of the optimization of what part of the data set we're looking at. It's something that I think translates very well into thinking about kind of the real world or versus how we're representing it on the computer. Because you can think about, you have a building, and the building has classrooms in it, or it has hallways, and the classrooms have, you know, different like desk areas or something like this. And so there's a great real world relationship that you can build between what the structure is and something that you can see and you can kind of move around yourself. And then it's also, in my experience, it's been tremendously, tremendously useful. I would say another one that I really enjoy, this isn't really a data structures one, but maybe you can kind of work it in there somehow, is more like graph search algorithms. Maybe a graph structure is a good example of that. But doing like path finding over a grid or another spatial structure like that, I think is both, you know, has a lot of tremendous amount of use in the real world in terms of figuring out just the driving instructions on your phone, something like that. That's a good example of how it's used, as well as the ever important, this can be used in video games because you can make an AI that goes, you know, moves around the game world or something like that. And as a programmer, I always love when I can apply something to making a game out of it.
Very, very cool. Yeah, those are good ideas. What would you say are like the big themes in your career in terms of the types of problems that you like to solve? And I guess my motivation for this question is, you know, you had kind of a story about your career. You always seem to come back to the same types of problems. What kind of motivates you in that regard? What perks you up when you see a certain type of problem? And did you think location would be such a big theme?
I think when I started out, I didn't have that idea in mind. I came from more of a software background, more from like an engineering or computer science background. Some people come from more of like a geography or kind of specialized into land or the sciences relating to that. But that wasn't the case for me. For me, it was more from computers, which was the first thing that, you know, I got into. And thinking about that, I think a couple of things come to mind, and it kind of relates to why I got into H3 in the first place back at Uber. And I remember thinking to myself, this seems really technically cool, and it also seems really important, really at the core of what Uber is doing. And I mean, you can have Uber without hexagons and Uber without H3, it'd be very different, I think, than what we have today. But having that kind of system at the core of it helped them to, you know, do all these cool technical things in terms of the precision at which they were able to work, and the resolution that they were able to work at. So it was important, certainly in that sense. And it was also a cool technical problem. It was a technical problem that you can kind of that you can draw out. I said before, kind of half joking, that, you know, you can kind of relate it to games and to video games. But that is also important, that you can see what you're working on, and you can use it to have fun, and you can use it to play and to kind of challenge yourself. And I think that that's one of the great aspects of that, is that you're able to challenge yourself. And, you know, one thing I'll say also for video games, which is, you know, quite a bit different than what I'm working on in terms of the other stuff right now, is that there's a great amount of technical challenge there. And there's a great variety of technical challenge because of all the technical constraints that you're under. And in a sense, that's also, I think, kind of the case for a lot of these spatial and temporal-spatial problems as well, because of the size of the data and how frequently it's updated and things like this, you're under a lot of constraints in order to be able to use it. And so you have to come up with interesting ways, with different ways, with innovative ways, in order to use it, in order to get the best data, in order to get data that actually reflects what's going on in the world, in order to make measurements. There's all sorts of interesting technical challenge there. And so I think that's, those are kind of a couple of the core ideas that I have floating around in my head right now. I would say maybe one other one is working on things that are new and that are innovative. I'm working on my second startup now, and whether I like it or not, I guess that does kind of reflect the something about how I'm working and being interested in a different challenge and a new challenge. It's a very wide open thing of the startup can do anything. Anything can happen, and that kind of problem.
Yeah. So if someone is starting a new project today and it involves, you know, location data, involves whether it's lat long, geospatial, what could they do in the beginning in the setup to make their lives easier? Even if it's not a technical answer, like use this technology, even if it's just like, what are some things to think about when you first start collecting and storing and figuring out the use case of what you're doing?
I think there's maybe a couple suggestions I could offer. One is that I think that the data itself really matters tremendously, and getting some sense of what is that data, where did it come from, what can I use it for, is very important. And so being able to see the data is usually very helpful for this. That's been something I've been trying to get people to pick up for a number of years now, that you have to look at the data. You have to see, okay, did this data come from somebody on the ground entering it? Did it come from machine measurement? Did it come from remote sensing measurement, which might have, you know, some machine learning related error? Getting a sense of where the data came from and what you can really expect from it, I think is very important, and is just key to being able to kind of build anything on top of that. Another is, I think that we're moving more and more towards these kind of cloud native geospatial formats. And I think that doing things in a modern way is going to pay off in the long run. We're seeing now more open data that's being released in like these GeoParquet formats and Parquet formats and cloud optimized GeoTIFF and formats like this. And I think starting with your data in kind of the most modern way is going to set you up for success. There's a lot of like jokes floating around in the geospatial world about shape files and all the difficulties with them. And you copy the shape file but not the sidecar file. And just to try not to deal with that if you don't have to. If you don't have to, try to start with the more modern way, because I think that's starting to become mature enough that we can really suggest to people, this is a good option for you to be starting with now, as you're embarking on your project. And I can't do this podcast without mentioning, and also my tool. If you go to fuse.io, don't reinvent the wheel. If we have a UDF that can already do some of the processing that you're interested in, okay, there's an open source thing that's going to help you do that. So if you're able to either use something from our open source or use the platform that we're building in order to integrate that data into the rest of your workflow, then obviously I think that's going to be a great boon to you.
So who could use Fused? Is it only something for organizations or people who have large amounts of data, or is it something you get started with if you kind of have kind of a small data set and you want to play around? You might be targeting the bigger people, but like, is there a certain threshold where it's like, oh, you should definitely check us out?
I think Fused is applicable at different levels of that. I would say it's applicable both to somebody who's more an engineer, more programmer, who wants to work on code directly, who's much more comfortable with that. But it's also applicable to somebody who's maybe getting that code from either from somebody else, or they're working with a consultant, or they're not interested in going into the details of the code, but they want to have the ability to change those parameters, as I was saying earlier, or to integrate that into other pieces of work that they're doing. They want to pull it into another tool. They want to pull it into their document, something like that. They want to include that data or that map there. So those are some ways of thinking about it. And Fused is something that I think is applicable at both smaller scales and larger scales. It's particularly offers some advantages for larger scales because of kind of the more cloud optimized aspects of it. But even if you're not working with these large data sets, if you're working with a smaller data set, it is still something where it can help you with that development process, because you can go through that same core development iteration of changing something about the code. Seeing the data reload or re-render on the map in response to that. And that's something that actually can be a great benefit if you are working on a smaller data set, because you can go through a lot of those cycles very quickly, and it enables you to experiment more.
Very cool, very cool. All right. So where can someone check out, well, both Fuse and check out, your latest work and your updates?
For myself, I think the best place to find me right now is on LinkedIn or maybe GitHub. If you want to follow updates from me, probably LinkedIn is the best option. And I'm Isaac Brodsky there. You can find the spelling in the show notes, I'm sure. And for Fused, the best place to follow us is either on LinkedIn or by going to our website, which is fused.io, which is FUSED.io.
All right. Isaac, always a pleasure having you on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on again. It's great to be on the podcast again, and thanks so much.
All right. I love the part where we talked about basic computer science. That stuff always interests me. And I also like diving into the visualizations to see what's possible. I hope you do too. The show notes will be available at localmaxradio.com/318. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. The Local Maximum is now hosted on Substack. To support the show, join our online community on localmaximum.substack.com. Find show notes and additional materials at our website, localmaxradio.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. Remember to subscribe on your podcast app. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week. It'll feel the power.